We're ready for some football, baby.
It's a Football Friday with the boss.
I call shot like a boss.
And the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gal
and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio. I'm David Gal, the boss. Carla Dawson, the gloss. Hour number two. And we've got some compelling guests coming up here. One of your favorites, an old Raider. For you, a Raider fan, Princess of Darkness, we're going to hear from George Atkinson, the outstanding safety on that old Raiders team with John Madden. He had an illustrious career.
He sure did, and I hope he can shed some light on the unillustrious start of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Well, I do look forward to asking him, what's gone wrong? Why have they gone off the rails? Is it coaching? Because the roster looks very talented coming into the season. Everybody thought the Raiders and the AFC West in general was going to be outstanding. And something's not right for that offense to be so inept against the Saints defense. Really, really frustrating. Maybe Atkinson has the answers.
Well, and it's tough because you look at the Raiders roster. It is a top eight roster, and yet their record is 2-6.
Yeah, that puts Josh McDaniels on the hot seat.
Yes, it does.
Yet again. And then after Atkinson, we're going to be joined by Hudson Mason. You may recall he was the former quarterback of Georgia. He's now a college football analyst, and it'll be great to visit with him about all things college football, including the CFP rankings that have just come out. We now have a first glimpse into sort of how the college football season's unfolding.
It's going to be exciting. I'm ready.
Well, Tennessee, number one. His team, Georgia, is in the top four, and they play Tennessee in what really isn't. For the regular season, this is as good as it gets, right? Two teams that are elite, two teams that, if the season were to finish today, would be in the college football playoffs. Really excited for that Tennessee-Georgia matchup.
And just know that Alabama is not happy sitting at six, especially with Clemson and Michigan in front of them.
Hey, they'll get their chance, right?
They'll get their chance. It all works out. It does.
It usually does, always with some chaos, but in this case, this early, we can know that many of those teams that are complaining about their status, such as maybe TCU being out of the top four, they'll get their shot. And the season will unfold. There'll be great, great head-to-head matchups that will show where people stand. And then we'll be joined by Alex Gold out of Kansas City, and we'll talk to him about the Chiefs and their big pickup of a wide receiver. Tony has joined them. They've made a trade from the Giants, and we'll talk to Alex Gold later in the hour. All that and more when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network. It's the boss
and the gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Super Bowl champion, former Raider George Atkinson. George, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
Well, we want to begin with the state of Raider Nation. The Raiders obviously off to a difficult start. In fact, I might preface this by noting that my co-host here, Carla Dawson, is the biggest Raiders fan I know. She has been raised as, well, a princess of darkness, and she's grieving right now, the state of the Raiders. What can you tell her about the Raiders that would give her any hope?
Help us, George. I'm a cradle Raiders girl, and I need some answers.
It's got to get better. Can't get any worse. Right?
There is that.
There's that. So, a shutout is pretty much the bottom of the barrel.
There's always light at the end of the tunnel. you can have, I was talking with some guys yesterday, and we were talking about chemistry. And I think the thing that makes winners are chemistry, and that's the chemistry of the players and the coaches and the front office. Everybody's on the same page, and you're grooving together. I'm not saying that the Raiders aren't on the same page, but they're not playing together, and that's a sign that there's some chemistry off somewhere.
Yeah, hard to see. We're talking to George Atkinson. He's Super Bowl champion with the now Las Vegas Raiders. He was with the Oakland Raiders. But one of the things is it looks like on paper this team has a ton of talent. Now, you're suggesting chemistry is lacking on that team. What role does the head coach play in that? I mean, obviously they made the transition this year. They brought in Josh McDaniels. And to date, at least, it doesn't look like McDaniels is a good fit. Do you think, how do you feel about Josh McDaniels and his role as a head coach of the Raiders right now?
Well, you know, when I think back to my playing days, you know, I think about John Madden, and I was on Gruden's staff, and I think about the three coaches, and I'm not out on the practice field anymore every day, so I can't really say what's going on the field. But evident from the record, 2-5, it shows that something's lacking. And when I think about those days with Madden, we had complete chemistry. When I say that from top to bottom, you checked your ego at the door, and we came to practice to work on what we were there for, and that was to perfect our skills so that we could be perfect on Sunday. I'm not saying that they're not working at that, but what I am saying, something is not clicking. Something, I mean, when you get shut out, that's an indication that, hey, your offense is not getting in position to get points, and your defense, they may be playing somewhat good, but when you're on the field a lot, your offensive 1, 2, 3 and out, mm-hmm. and you're on the field as a defense, it takes a lot out of you. So that throws everything off. If the offense is not working, the defense is not working, you have problems.
George, you bring up a great point, and I think you're exactly right. When you are out so quickly in offense, you have continual 3-and-outs. That defense is exhausted. And I'm looking at Derek Carr, you know, who's the most loyal Raider and such an unbelievable leader, to see how he led that team last year through the John Gruden debacle, through the Henry Ruggs disaster situation. But I look at Derek Carr, and it's looking like he has regressed. But I look at, he's had 5 head coaches in his 8 years with the Raiders, starting with Tony Sperano, then Jack Del Rio, then John Gruden, then Rick Bisaccia, then now McDaniels. How much does that lack of consistency and all those different offensive schemes have to do with how Derek Carr, how much can he process, and how much does this have to do with his play on the field?
You know, you bring up a good point. You know, having that many coaches, I can't imagine, because I only played for one.
Right.
Mm. Actually, I played for 2 coaches. I played for John Routes, and I played for John Madden. Having 5 coaches in how many years?
8
years. Yeah. I mean, come on. You know, that's enough of all different systems that you have to pick up and perfect. Not just pick it up. You have, as the quarterback, you have to perfect that system. You have to be the engine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you put too much weight on an engine, it breaks down. You know, I think that's what's happening with Derek. He's just overloaded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much information. You're talking about 5 different systems that he has to pick up, different systems he has to perfect in order to win. And that's a heavy load on anybody. And you know, you could probably, I guess, you see the weight of it this season, you know, because he's not playing up to Derek Carr's potential.
No, I agree with you completely. And I'm curious to think, so you played under Al Davis, owner of the team, and now Las Vegas is under the direction of Mark Davis. And after the shutout by the Saints on Sunday, that 24-0 debacle, Mark Davis came out and said, Josh McDaniels is our coach, and he will be for years to come. Is that, hey, that's great ownership, or is that we're being a little tone deaf? Where do you come out on that, George?
I don't think he's tone deaf. I think he's looking ahead and seeing if things can change. If they change, perfect. If not, I'm sure that he will make a change.
Okay.
Certainly he says that now to settle down all the rumors. You know, there's a lot of rumors out there, Josh. Mark Davis is going to fire Josh McDaniels. And Josh McDaniels is on the hot seat. So you hear all kinds of rumors. So in order to quell the rumors, mm-hmm. that Josh McDaniels can concentrate and feel like he's going to be there and try to get things rolling in direction, Mark has to say that.
We're talking to Super Bowl champion George Atkinson, who played in the heyday of the Raiders. And even as I say that, it makes Carla smile.
That's right.
But let's look back. I mean, John Madden, we've lost him He was an amazing presence as a coach and as an NFL broadcaster. Just the mark he made on the game. When you look back on John Madden, what are your memories? How would you like him to be remembered?
Oh, man, John was, you know, I have fond memories of John because when I first got to Oakland, my rookie season, when I flew into San Francisco, the coach that picked me and a guy by the name of Mike Leinart up at the airport was John Madden. It was his second year as a coach, and he was kind of like a runner. And on that ride from San Francisco to Santa Rosa, we started to develop a relationship. And he was an assistant. He was not the head coach then. And we got to know each other personally to the point that we would watch boxing matches together. So we had a lot in common. He loved boxing. And we would watch these matches from Mexico. We didn't know who the fighters were. We'd just pick a corner because we enjoyed the sport. And we became very good friends as he became head coach. And I have a lot of respect for John because John demanded respect. And playing for him, the reason we were so good as a team that had been together for so long under the same circumstances with the same coach is because we respected him and we played for him. And that's where players have to get to the point that you're not just playing for yourself out of paycheck. You're playing for the organization. You're playing for the coach. You're playing because you want to give your best to that coach because of what he represents to you. And each player has to have that, and we had that during that time. That's why we were so successful.
It was an amazing run.
The Raider way.
The Raider way.
That's right.
You've made
There's
Carl.
Only one way, and that's the Raider way.
You got it, George. Just win, baby. That's what we know, right?
Just win, baby. Pride and poise.
Pride and poise. Well, you've still got it, George. I really appreciate your joining us here. Thanks for all the time.
It's the Boss
in the Box
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Hudson Mason. He's a college football analyst for ESPN. Hudson, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me. Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, great to have you. In fact, I think the last time I saw the two of you in the same room having a conversation, it was late at night. There was a nightclub. The music started playing, and people started dancing. Am I right about that?
No, I was right alongside Hudson's wife, Catherine, too. I just want to be clear. We were doing the thing by the pool, whatever that dance was. I can't even remember what it was. Some type of slide shuffle, something or other.
Yeah.
I've got video of that.
And shuffle.
Little shuffle that you all were doing. It was very impressive. You've got moves, Hudson. They go beyond the football field. He can move.
Yeah, I was never considered dual threat, but maybe off the field. Got a little more movement in my hips.
That's right. Hey, we did fail to mention in the intro that Hudson was the quarterback for the University of Georgia in the day.
Yes.
In a very young day, of course.
Yeah.
But, okay, Hudson, first CFP rankings came out last night. How do you feel about your Bulldogs sitting there at number 3?
Yeah, I think overall I was fine with it. I think maybe maybe a little surprised that they weren't number 2. I think that their win over Oregon in the fashion that they blew out Oregon is a little more impressive than what Ohio State did to Penn State. But at the end of the day, I didn't have a lot of outrage about it, knowing that a lot of this will take care of itself. Tennessee, number 1, I thought they deserved to be number 1. 5 wins versus top 25 teams. I mean, what they've done this year is, their resume really is unmatched. And then Ohio State, Michigan, maybe, surprise of that Michigan was in the top 4. I thought TCU got robbed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the good thing is that it's still really early and it'll all play itself out as soon as this weekend with Georgia and Tennessee.
Let's talk about that game. How do you break it down? What do you look for from Georgia this Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, everybody's talking about Tennessee's offense and Georgia's defense. I think obviously that'll play a huge role in it. Tennessee goes fast, and they challenge you in a lot of different ways with how far they spread you out with their formations. If you watch their receivers, closely on Saturday, you'll see that they pretty much line up almost near the sideline. And that's a kind of a brand and a system that they embrace. And, you know, the challenges that that puts on a defense is you have to cover a lot more grass with the receivers split out that far. And it really is much harder to disguise as a defense what you're doing when you have to spread out and cover space that much more pre-snap. And so, you know, this is an offense that Josh Heupel has been running pretty much his whole career as a coach, from Missouri to Oklahoma as an assistant and UCF as a head coach. And Hendon Hooker has been an incredible story.
Wow.
I mean, obviously, he's a Heisman favorite, but, you know, this is a guy who wasn't even a starter at Tennessee last year, didn't start originally at Virginia Tech, and he's taken care of the football. Only 4 interceptions in 2 years so far at Tennessee, only 1 this year. So it's going to be tough. Tennessee's the healthier team. Georgia is not healthy. They lost Nolan Smith, their best pass rusher, in the cocktail party. So that's a big compliment. Not a compliment, but that's a big thing to be able to say, as Josh Heupel said last night on the College Football Playoff show, that he felt like this was the healthiest his team's been all year.
Right, and health is something that you can't control. It is what it is, and you've got to roll with it one way or the other. Let me ask you, Hudson, about Michigan. I felt like, wow, I was really surprised that they weren't in the top four given an 8-0 schedule. But then I noticed last night, they talked about it on the show, their non-conference schedule is ranked 79th in strength of schedule. You know, their non-conference opponents of Rutgers, it was Colorado State, Hawaii, and UConn are a combined, you know, 8-18 record. And to me, it looks like this comes down to, if Michigan beats Ohio State, do you think that vaults them automatically into the top four? And if they don't, do you think they have a chance, given that weak strength of schedule, to make it into the top four?
Yeah, I think that the winner of that game, or excuse me, let me rephrase it, I think the loser of that game is not going to have a chance at getting in. And I say that, and I felt much more convicted in saying that before last night. But then when I heard the College Football Playoff commissioner, who's also the athletic director at NC State, talk about why they had Ohio State 2 instead of Georgia, he talked about their offense and how balanced of a team he was. And I don't agree with using that as a reason to justify a team's ranking. Because if that's the case, if you're talking about, hey, well, we have this team and because they're more balanced, and you know, it's like, well, did you watch the Syracuse Clemson team? I mean, you know, game, excuse me. I mean, Georgia trailed against Missouri mm-hmm. earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. And we kind of do this every year. It seems like the goalposts move with what they use to, as far as criteria. But on the surface, I would think that the lack of putting yourself on the line, if you're Michigan, with how weak that out-of-conference mm-hmm. schedule was, will certainly come back to haunt you if they aren't able to run the table and be undefeated.
Yeah, I agree with you, Hudson, because if you're in the SEC, you have a lot more leeway to have a weaker non-conference schedule because your in-conference is the toughest in the nation.
Right.
Speaking of the SEC, Brian Harsin out at Auburn. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody. It's kind of a surprise with the timing. He leaves with a 9-12 record after 21 games. Do you think it came down to the recruiting issues with Harsin, or what do you think it was that allowed him to not allow him to have success with an Auburn program? I mean, he lost Bo Nix to Oregon. I mean, what exactly do you see? Would love your thoughts.
I think it was doomed from the beginning. I think it was Auburn is a very dysfunctional program, and maybe more so than any program in college football. Mm-hmm. Their boosters, and I'm talking about, you know, their big time boosters, are as egotistical and need to be involved and pampered as maybe any other boosters in college football. And I think that you've seen that in how dysfunctional the last couple of years have been, really since they fired Gus Malzahn. And when they went to hire Brian Harsin, it was a dysfunctional search. They tried to get a couple guys before him that couldn't land them, and it seemed like they just settled for Brian Harsin. It never made sense. You're Auburn, and you're going out to get a guy from Boise, Idaho, who's never coached in the SEC, never recruited in the SEC, had zero ties. It just never felt like he was fully embraced, never felt like he was really the guy they wanted. And you'd have zero chance of winning when you don't have that support and that belief from your administration from the get-go. And then, he lost his coordinators in the offseason. Mm-hmm. I think he's a difficult guy to work for from what I've heard. You know, he lost Mike Bobo to Georgia as an analyst. Then he lost his defensive coordinator to Oklahoma State. Those aren't exactly like step-ups, you know, like at the very best they're lateral steps. So I thought that was weird and telling. And then obviously the off-season situation where it was like almost like a coup against him to get him fired with reportedly a female assistant. So it just is it felt like that it was just a marriage that was going to be a divorce from the get-go. And you know, Auburn can go out and hire whoever they want,
sure.
Whether it be Hugh Freeze or Deion Sanders or whoever it is. But at the end of the day, if Auburn and the new administration, the new president, the new athletic director,
right.
and the boosters don't step back and let whoever it is just do their job, then it'll be the same merry-go-round over and over.
Right, because Harsin ended up being the shortest tenured coach in the last 93 years at Auburn. That's not a good place to hold. Eek.
We're talking to former Georgia quarterback Hudson Mason, college football analyst now for ESPN. So looking around, there are some big job openings that are coming up, Auburn being one. Are there assistants out there whom you really like, whom you project into a prominent head coaching position? Who are you looking at as an up-and-comer? I mean, Bill O'Brien's an assistant in Alabama. You hear his name all the time. We live in Houston. We saw what he did to the Texans. So it's hard for us to be optimistic about that name, but he's obviously on everyone's short list. What other names are impressive to you?
Yeah, it's interesting. As far as assistant coaches, you know, you always look at some of the Broyles Award winners. Josh Gattis, who was the Broyles Award winner at Michigan last year, left and is now the offensive coordinator at Miami. And Miami has struggled on offense this year. I don't know if it'll be as big of a year for coordinators to get head coaching jobs as maybe it will be for other head coaches to get other head coaching jobs, whether that be Deion Sanders at Jackson State. Maybe certainly Bill O'Brien's name will be thrown around with the Georgia Tech job as well. He used to coach there earlier in his career. Hugh Freeze, who was just signed to an 8-year extension at Liberty, will that be enough to keep him around? So I think as far as maybe some of the bigger openings, and we'll see itself play out what jobs come open, but I think it might be a bigger year. I'd see more current head coaches move for other head coaching jobs than I think we may see coordinators or assistants.
Fair enough. Let me ask you one other question related to transitions. Obviously, NIL and the transfer pool portal, I mean, it's created a much more fluid movement among players. How do you feel that affects the game? Where do you think this leaves the NCAA football 2-3 years from now? Project that forward. What's the impact?
Yeah. So I get to talk with coaches on a weekly basis as I get ready for these games. And, you know, name, image, and likeness comes up. It's the roster turnover is as high as it's ever been in college football. I think there's got to be parameters and rules put in place. I think I've always been a favor of player mobility, but not this much player mobility. I think 1 year, an automatic transfer, kind of a mulligan, is what I would be in favor of. This, hey, I'm going to transfer 2 times, 3 times is ridiculous. I'm calling the Cincinnati Navy game this weekend, and there's a player, last weekend, that's what it was. Last weekend I had South Alabama versus Arkansas State, and there was a player on one of the teams that had already been at 7 schools, literally had transferred. Yeah, had transferred pretty much every single year that he had been in college. And, you know, that's the stuff where I think beyond football, it's like, you know, we are kind of promoting kids to run from adversity on the first sign of for anything to go wrong. And so whether it be name, image, and likeness or the transfer portal, I don't think the NCAA knew or had any foresight of how to get ahead of this thing. It's been the wild, wild west. And you talk to coaches, it's run a lot of coaches out of the business already. To the NFL or to retire.
Sure.
You saw that at Virginia last year with Bronco Mendenhall. So, I mean, he had a really good team, won 10 games last year, and then abruptly retired. And, you know, you see the how much they miss him this year with the step back that they've taken. So, I don't know. The NCAA is, in my opinion, as a former student athlete, has always been a pretty big joke.
I agree.
They sit up there in Indianapolis and almost, you know, witness protection, collecting their checks. Nowhere to be found with...
great way to put it.
You know, yeah. So... I don't have much faith that it'll get turned around.
Awesome stuff. Hudson Mason joining us here on Sports Map.
It's the boss
and the gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is an old favorite, former employee here.
A young favorite,
the great Alex Gold. He's a show host on 610 Sports in Kansas City. Alex, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Great to be on with you. Yeah, it's been a little while, but it's always good to talk some football with you guys.
Well, it's great to have you. For those who don't know, in the old days, the Boss and the Gloss, Carla and I were doing a show here in the studio, and Alex followed us. He came in and did a show in our studio right after we would conclude, and he'd always come in and he'd have a big smile on his face because he had Patrick Mahomes, and the Chiefs were ascending at that time. And then Carla, my big Raiders fan here, you two were at odds. I had to keep you two separate. But otherwise, things were great when you were here. Surely you miss Gao Media. You miss your time here at Sports Map Radio, right?
We had a great time. I love doing the night show. You're right. I would follow you guys there, and then we'd be keeping an eye on all the action that was going on all night. I think I was on to around midnight or so. So, yeah, we had some good times. And I will admit, now it is nice, though, to sometimes just sit back and watch those Thursday night Chiefs games instead of trying to be composed while I'm watching my team play doing the show.
That's right. You had to watch and broadcast real time.
That's true. That's a test. That's a test of will for sure.
I do like being able to kind of sit back and enjoy the game a little bit more when my team's on. That's for sure.
Alex, you're always the professional.
Well, the interesting thing about Alex Gold, now that he's moved back to Kansas City, is there room in Kansas City for both Patrick Mahomes and Alex Gold at the same time?
Good question. Fair.
Well, let's start with your Chiefs. They look like they're off to a great start. I mean, they just haven't missed a beat offensively, it would seem. The receiving core,
except for the Colts game, but we're going to call that a one-off.
Well, that's a one-off. There's always a one-off or two or three. I mean, in a long season, right? What's the state of the Chiefs now? They made a trade at the deadline. Walk us through the thinking behind the trade and the state of that offense and the receiving core.
You're right, though, about this Chiefs offense. The big question coming in was, when they trade Tyreek Hill in the offseason, how are they ever going to live up to those type of expectations and have the same output? And during training camp, the conversation here locally was, all right, it might look a little bit different, but will the numbers still be the same at the end of the season? And to this point, as this team sits 7 games into their season, it definitely looks different. They don't have Tyreek Hill, and Tyreek Hill's doing great things down in Miami. I mean, he might end up with 2,000 yards there, but Patrick Mahomes is pacing to have one of his best seasons since his MVP year in 2018 when he had 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards. He's pacing without Tyreek Hill for just under 50 touchdowns, but over 5,000 yards, and this team is 5-2, so it looks so much different, but they're the number one scoring offense in football. So that's what's kind of bizarre about it, and also what has been comforting for Chiefs fans is that, all right, you were willing to trade Tyreek Hill, and yet you're sitting here, you still have Andy Reid, you still have Patrick Mahomes, and you're able to have still the explosiveness as well. They actually are tied for the lead in the league when it comes to big pass plays over 25 yards, which is probably something you would have maybe thought would go away.
Nobody would have seen that coming. That's right. That's a great stat. That's really intriguing that they've been able to do that.
It's pretty remarkable. And this division is not as tough. Not as tough as everybody thought too. So Chiefs fans are feeling good. You know, they slipped up against the Bills, and the question is whether or not the Chiefs can do enough by the time they likely will face each other again in the postseason, as they have the last couple of years. This is really the rivalry in the AFC. You would think it's a divisional deal, but this has become the rivalry of Allen and Mahomes.
Let me ask you, Alex, so last year's AFC championship game versus Cincinnati, you know, there was that sideline scuffle. I mean, the Chiefs are up 2 touchdowns, and Hill and Hardman are going at it for, you know, what I assume is probably touches and this kind of thing. Did you see at that point that these two are not going to be able to coexist on a team? And if so, did you think that Hill would be the one leaving?
So nobody thought they were going to trade Tyreek Hill. I mean, that caught everybody off guard back in March when it happened. I mean, I think, you know, the one thing that is interesting about the whole conversation around the Tyreek Hill trade is there's this notion nationally at times where it's that, all right, maybe the Chiefs didn't want Tyreek Hill. And that's just not the case. I mean, anybody telling you that the plan was to trade Tyreek Hill, that was never plan A. What happened was they were willing to pay him $25, $26 million per year to make him one of the highest paid wide receivers. And then your guy there in Las Vegas, Devontae Adams, gets traded from the Green Bay Packers to Las Vegas and kind of resets the wide receiver market. And at that point in time, Tyreek Hill wanted to get the deal that he has now, which is, you know, making him the highest paid wide receiver in football, and he's backing it up. But the Chiefs were not willing to do that, and that's when they had to kind of move off of Plan B. So I don't think the sideline or reports of Eric Bieniemy, the Chiefs offensive coordinator, and Tyreek, and maybe not getting along, I don't really think that was any bit of the reason why he got moved. I think at some point the price was met to where they weren't willing to go any higher in Kansas City for Tyreek.
We're talking to Alex Gold, who happens to be my favorite radio show host in Kansas City. You can hear him on 610 AM. But you talked about the division. Coming into this season, everyone thought the AFC West was the toughest division in football. The Chiefs at the top of it, but the other
addition
teams,
of Russell Wilson and Denver.
You bet. And then the Raiders poised with Devontae Adams. And the Chargers, of course, Justin Herbert's outstanding. And now the division doesn't look so formidable. Look across the curtain there. Let's talk about the Raiders. What do you think is the problem with the Raiders? Because there's a lot of talent on that roster.
Yeah, the division, boy, were we all wrong about it. I mean, everybody was thinking this was going to be a historically great division. And, you know, you've got four top 10, top 12 quarterbacks. Derek Carr in the mix there as well. And each team is just underachieved. And I think for the Raiders, what's been surprising is that was a team, despite all the chaos a year ago with the off-the-field situation and then, of course, the coaching in-season firing of John Gruden, and you've got your special teams coordinator as the interim head coach, and yet they were the only other team in the AFC West that made the playoffs. And, mm-hmm. and that was what was surprising to me, how people discounted the Raiders heading into the season. And now, look, I obviously look foolish. I thought the Raiders were getting a little bit of disrespect heading into this year because I'm like, wait a second, they're a playoff team a year ago. They go and trade for Devontae Adams. How are they not getting more attention? And honestly, to this point, I think it's a lot on the coaching staff. I think Josh McDaniels, who, you know, had what an 8 to 10 year gap in between his short term gig in Denver as a head coach, goes back to Bill Belichick, and you would have thought maybe he had learned some things and some of his mistakes. And that offense is a mess. There's no excuse for it based off of, I think Derek Carr is still a top 12 quarterback or so in the league, and Devontae Adams is one of the best wide receivers in the league, and they just have no rhythm whatsoever on offense, and they're done. I mean, they're buried. I thought there was a chance they could have rattled off 3 or 4 wins in a row if they would have beat the Saints based on the schedule, but to go down to New Orleans against a team was 31st in scoring defense, and you can't score a single point, that was honestly just a pathetic effort all the way around. And so I think the Raiders are going to have an interesting decision. If it keeps going south, could Josh McDaniels be another one-and-done type of coach there in Las Vegas? We'll see.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Alex, because I look at their two major offseason acquisitions, and it was Josh McDaniels and Devontae Adams. I'm not worried about Devontae Adams, but there's a reason he's not open, and there's a reason there's no rhythm. And I just look right to Josh McDaniels, and then, you know, I'm very frustrated by Mark Davis coming out the day after that spanking in New Orleans. I mean, literally could not put up a score, not even a field goal, and saying, Josh is our guy, and he is for many, many years to come. I mean, there's one part about quelling rumors. I get that. But to what point does this make Mark Davis look like a fool?
Yeah, I mean, and look, time and time again, we do hear from owners or GMs, and, you know, publicly they'll say comments like that, and then suddenly check back in 8 weeks from now if they're still sitting on, you know, 3 or 4 wins or something like that. You know, how much does that change the thought process there? Does another opportunity present itself with a head coach that they perhaps think they can go and acquire? So, yeah, I'm not surprised by the comments at this point in time. But, yeah, they've been one of the more disappointing teams other than the other team in the AFC West and the Denver Broncos. My goodness.
Which the Raiders were actually able to beat the Broncos. I don't know that that's anything to be proud of. But break down what's going on in Denver. Holy
my goodness.
Moly.
You know, it's amazing because we just got done mentioning Josh McDaniels, and he should be so thankful that Nathaniel Hackett exists, because I think he'd be getting way more attention nationally in terms of the poor job he's done. But Nathaniel Hackett's right there in your same division, and Nathaniel Hackett from the get-go, from week one, that opening night game against the Seattle Seahawks, they've looked, you know, lost and poorly coached. They can't even get the right amount of players on the field at the right time. And Russell Wilson in that trade / now contract extension is going to be something that, unless he somehow snaps out of this, they're going to be haunted by that till 2026. And we were looking at the numbers because it's one thing to trade for Russell Wilson, and I think everybody would have made the trade if you don't have one of those guys. That's not the problem. Multiple teams would have done that. It's the idea that they gave him a contract extension when they didn't have to. And now the Broncos long-term are in a terrible spot, not just with the lack of success this year, but if this is what Russell Wilson is, you look at the numbers on the deal, they really cannot get out of that contract until 2026. So this is a long-term issue. They have to find a way to get Russell Wilson, you know, back to some sort of form. Otherwise, they're a whole lot of trouble, and Nathaniel Hackett will be the one guy that will get removed because they can't get out of the Russell deal. So it, to me, will be a situation where Nathaniel Hackett could also be a one-and-done head coach unless they turn something around here pretty quick.
Indeed, it's not, and it's just not the financial commitment they've made to Russell Wilson, which is heavy, but also the draft capital they've now given away. This could set that franchise back for several years.
Which is probably what led to the Bradley Chubb trade, because they're getting draft picks back, you know, first round too. I think it is really insane. And, you know, you bring up a great point, Alex, about paying before you didn't need to extend Russell Wilson. I mean, I see about bringing him in. Arizona did the same thing with Kyler Murray, and that's not turning out to look so great either. It's just really... I don't know. I don't know why these teams feel, and maybe you can shed some light on that. Why do you feel like you have to lock someone up before they need to be locked up?
Yeah, I mean, I think for Russell Wilson, they were probably banking off of the track record and who he had been in his career. And, you know, you're trying to get some more security for everybody involved. I'm sure his agent, when he was traded from Seattle to Denver, is probably something his agent was pushing for. And at that point in time, they were, you know, all this excitement. People were talking about the Broncos maybe winning the division, and maybe they're a Super Bowl contender. And so I think you get caught up in all of that, and now you're unfortunately in the spot that they are in. And you got a new ownership group in Denver. I mean, I think it's kind of just all around from top to bottom a mess right now for the Broncos, who have just been such a disappointment. I know here in Kansas City, everybody's been thrilled to see that happen.
Right. Sure, in Kansas City. But it is interesting. You look
I love
back,
the honesty.
You can see how it all happened, right? The Broncos, quote, had a complete team except for a quarterback, and they brought in Peyton Manning, and they won a Super Bowl. And so you could think, oh, let's just replicate history. We've not been able to draft and groom our own quarterback, but we're pretty good at building a general team, and we can bring in a guy who's been successful elsewhere. So clearly there was a foundation and a history that led them to that kind of a decision. But boy, if they don't turn Russell Wilson around quickly, it will be a long, painful time. One other topic I want to jump to is the Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa, because when he's been healthy, he's been exceptional. But remember, coming into this year, there were all kinds of questions around whether he was, in fact, the long-term answer for the Dolphins and whether they need to hoard their extra picks to allocate for a future quarterback. But now it might seem, well, Tua's going to be a franchise quarterback, and we can use these picks on other things like trading for Bradley Chubb, and they've still got picks to come. What's your take on Tua and how he projects now as a franchise quarterback?
I think you nailed it just in terms of their thought process and what they were potentially going to be setting themselves up for as an organization. That, hey, Tua, we surrounded you with Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. We've got an offensive-minded head coach that we think is really innovative and one of the bright upcoming minds. This is your time to show us that you're our long-term answer. And we all know that the concussion situation and the scary situation he found himself in, and hopefully he can avoid some of those hits going forward to make sure his career can be extended. But based off of his own performance, he's been well above average this year, and I kind of doubted that he could play at this level heading into the season. I think he gets a ton of credit for that, and they're probably in a spot now where he is going to end up getting an extension this offseason and be their long-term answer. And so now those draft assets that maybe they were going to use on a quarterback, they can, as you said, go and trade for Bradley Chubb. They can now go and likely in the draft continue to try to build that defense up, because they've got the playmakers on offense. But where they're struggling is their defense. I think if there's anything that's going to hold Tua and the Dolphins back this year from maybe going on a run, it perhaps is that defense. But they do, and see if you guys agree, they seem like if there was one team you were going to pick in the AFC that most likely could be the Cincinnati Bengals of this year.
Sure.
You know, a team that came somewhat out of nowhere and run through the AFC postseason. They seem like that team. I don't know if they will be, but that seems like the best case if you were to guess a team that could actually pull something like that off because of the talent that they have on offense.
Very good stuff. He's Alex Gold. You can hear him on 610 AM in Kansas City. Alex, really appreciate your joining us today.
Yeah, great to be on with you guys.
Take care.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and we are now at the end of the show, in the moment that I can turn to you, Carla, and say, what NFL game do you most look forward to watching this weekend and why?
I don't know if it's a most look forward to. It's a necessary watch.
Yes.
I'm going to see the very exciting battle of two and six teams as the Las Vegas Raiders take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. And as a Cradle Raiders fan, I need to know if they can't beat the Jaguars, then I'm done for the season. I mean, I always love my boys, but I'm not going to waste any more emotional energy on them. So I think this is a really
make
big
or break
game.
Week for the Raiders and Carla this season.
Absolutely. So that's mine. That is not super exciting, and I bet doesn't get a lot of viewership. But let's hear what the boss is going to be watching. What are you looking forward
to? Well, I'm looking at the Bucks and the Rams, two teams who came into this season with high expectations. Ton of star power on both teams, and they've both struggled mightily, I might add, and we're almost to the point of no return. One of them needs, I mean, they both need to pick it up right about now if they're really going to get serious on this season, and they're facing each other, which makes it intriguing, because the loser will be in a deep hole, and I really have to believe that my very instinct is that the Buccaneers and Tom Brady are going to get righted, I think, with the divorce now announced and something that he can set aside. Tom Brady can focus solely on football, and I think he'll get the Bucs back on track with a win this week against the Rams.
Well, and he has the gift of being in the NFC South, where at 3-5, they are very tightly in second place to an Atlanta team leading the division at a .500 record at 4-4. And then right behind them is New Orleans at 3-5.